Form an offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in Tempe, Arizona. Preparations are underway to play the Seattle Seahawks for the second time. I don't think you need me to remind you how poorly the offense did the last time they played.
Yeah, I mean, if you score 3 points as an offense, then, you know, you're outcoached, you're outplayed, all of the above. There's nothing else to say about it. They got after us.
Over the course of the next 3 weeks, it's basically the entire season for the Arizona Cardinals. They're 3-5 with three straight games against NFC Western Division opponents. Zaven Collins understands the magnitude of November.
We definitely understand. Yeah, you definitely understand how big this is. Got to win these games for the division. Got to win these games to get for the playoffs. Yeah, you definitely understand. We got to play great ball these next few weeks.
The Cardinals have Kyler Murray, who's going to kill Seattle with cliches.
Got to go 1-0. You know, that's the mentality is, you know, how do we get to 1-0 this week? Obviously, Seattle's playing really good football. Got a really good team, play hard as hell, well coached. We know what's coming in here this weekend. We just got to be prepared, have a good week, you know, execute on Sunday.
Cardinals made two transactions. They claimed defensive lineman Tristan Hill from the Dallas Cowboys, and they officially announced the signing of Kamu Rougier-Hill. Cliff Kingsbury says the linebacker will play inside for the Cardinals.
Really just found a player that we thought was really playing at a high level and could add some value as we move on throughout the season. That's all it came down to, a really productive player there in Houston.
The rest of the country is setting their clocks back, so this is the first 2 o'clock kickoff of the year for the Cardinals. The World Series is knotted up at 2 games apiece, with each team winning at the other team's park. Astros won last night 5-0 and created history. The Phillies are the first team since the Brooklyn Dodgers in 56 to not get a hit in a World Series game. Don Larsen pitched a perfect game in 56 for the Yankees. Christian Javier doesn't get credit for the no-no because he only pitched 6 innings, but he was still dominant. Third baseman Alex Bregman.
We grew up watching the World Series. We know that baseball's been going on for a long, long time, so just be a teammate on a team that did that is really special, so a moment that we'll all cherish forever.
We now move to Game 5 tonight. First pitch, 5:03. It'll be thrown by Noah Syndergaard up against the Astros' Justin Verlander. For the 7th time in the history of the world, the same two cities will compete in football and a World Series matchup on the same night as the Texans host the Eagles. Also in the NFL, huge news with the Washington Commanders. The U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia has launched a criminal investigation into financial improprieties within the organization. Hours before that news went public, the Washington football team announced that they've hired BOA Securities to explore, quote, potential transactions. Speculation says, finally, the Snyders are going to sell the team and get out of the NFL. My official opinion? Yes, yes, yes! Go! Despite the fact the Coyotes are within a 40-minute flight of 3 different teams in the Pacific Division, Arizona takes on their Central Division rivals, Dallas Stars, tonight. It's at Mullett Arena in Tempe. Face-off at 7 o'clock. Currently, the Stars lead the Central with 13 points. And finally, 2 different doorbell cameras in 2 different states caught 2 diametrically opposed actions on Halloween. An adult woman dressed as a barmaid at a restaurant approached a home that was working on the honor system that had 2 buckets of candy. She emptied both buckets of candy into her pumpkin. Now in Waconia, Minnesota, Christina Coleman did a similar thing, leaving out a big bucket of candy for the honor system for trick-or-treaters. That's when 12-year-old Abby noticed all the candy in the bowl was gone. So what did she do? She started dumping some of her candy back into the bowl so other kids wouldn't end up empty-handed. If we supposedly are advancing as a civilization and we have all of these higher institutions of academia, I have one important question. Why do all the stupid people get in line in front of me at the Costco gas pump? I don't get it. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Whatever it is that you've decided to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. My name is Doug Franz, and you have found the only podcast in the world totally devoted to the coverage of the four major sports franchises of one great American city, and it's a podcast that drops on your phone every weekday morning. We also cover ASU, U of A, GCU, the Rattlers, the Rising, and the Merck. Almost. This is Doug Franz Unplugged. Not bad, not bad. Hi. Hopefully everything went well for your Wednesday. I screwed up so bad yesterday. I feel terrible. I have research and research by Doug on Wednesdays, and I went to bed yesterday, and as I was going up the steps, I had already put the podcast up for everybody to listen to yesterday, anyone in the Unplugged Army, and I thought, oh, I forgot. And I forgot to do it. So doing it today. Hopefully you'll be entertained by that a little bit later in today's show. Thank you. That's where I want to start today, is just thank you. I'm getting so much support from a lot of you, and I really appreciate it. Today, I'm hoping to get some good information that I can share with you tomorrow. I am going to be in Tempe. I have been asked to MC the Valley Booster Club event in which for Sun Devil fans, in which Sean Aguano is going to speak to the group. And they've asked me to be the MC, so hopefully I can pick up some newly enlisted members to the Unplugged Army and get to know Sean Aguano a little bit better and see about him potentially being the next head coach. Remember the news that we got from Deep Sparky last week? That was actually this week, wasn't it? Wow. In which he let us know that a big booster, I shouldn't even say that, a potential big booster met with Dr. Crow and said, hey, I'm willing to donate a ton of money if Sean Aguano becomes the next head coach. So we'll talk to Coach Aguano, and I'll get some information from him and share it with you coming up on our tailgate show tomorrow. That would be a fantastic opportunity, if you don't mind. And I'll try to record some of it and maybe even have a little some of it for you if I can somehow pull that off for you. I don't know if I can, but I'll try to see what we can do. From a support standpoint, I just want to point out, I got this wonderful note today. It specifically says, P.S., I do not want this read for Town Hall Tuesday. So I won't read it, but it is a wonderful note of maybe how I can try to do something a little different on the podcast and grow the Unplugged Army. But here's what's cool about it. The person that sent it says, I am currently stationed, tells me where he's stationed, within the U.S. Navy. Listens out of state so he can still feel connected to home. And then, even more amazing to me, is he gives his rank, but then in parentheses, after his rank, it says General in the Unplugged Army. So you get the real naval rank, and then his rank in the Unplugged Army as General. I was just... It is the highest compliment that you can pay me is to find out that I am able to give even a little taste of home to somebody that's serving our country. It's embarrassingly humbling to me is the only way I can put it. It just gets me emotional to think to go from the shot heard round the world of Lexington and Concord to this very moment, the number of men and women that have been willing to die for freedom. And then to think some of those people are in the Unplugged Army, you know, and especially somebody in the Navy admitting that they're in an army. So that was really cool. So thank you, blank, blank, first class, I don't want to say your name because you asked me not to, but I just wanted to say I got the note, and it was really cool. Really cool if you get it, and thanks for your prayers because I certainly need it.
Doug's big one.
I found it really interesting, but I disagree with two of the better managers in the history of the game, one of them being a Hall of Famer, and I think the other one's going to be a Hall of Famer. And that is, in a 7-game series, obviously irrelevant to football, but as you look at hockey, basketball, and baseball, to you,
What is the most important game in a 7-game series? Think about that. If, I mean, obviously you've got to win 4 of the 7 games. So is there one that's more important than the other? Of course, there's the cliche, hey, we got to focus on right now. We got to blah, blah, blah. But what's most important? If there's one game that's most important in your opinion, well, this is Dusty Baker after game 4 talking about a Hall of Fame manager's opinion and how it affected him last night.
I had heard an interview by Joe Torre that game 4 is a pivotal game in a 7-game series. And, you know, that's why we kind of wanted Javi pitching that, you know, that 4th game. And, you know, like, I mean, the guy was cool as if it was June or July. And, you know, that's how he is. And I was glad that I heard his mom and dad were here from Dominican. They got to see him pitch. And, you know, it's always great when you do something in front of your folks. And, I mean, this is a world stage here. From people from all over the world are watching this. And he certainly put himself on the map.
If you didn't see the game last night, it was historic. I went through it pretty quickly in the 4-minute offense. But 1956, there's a perfect game between the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Yankees. Don Larsen was an average, above average pitcher, but he threw the only perfect game in the World Series history, one of only 2 in postseason history. Roy Halladay has one as well. I think that was Phillies against the Reds. And this no-hitter thrown by the Astros is a joint venture, so therefore it became the first ever combined no-hitter in a World Series. I just am focused on the comment by Dusty Baker in addition to saying Joe Torre has said it. For me, the most important game is Game 5. Now, you could argue any other game, but other than Game 1, the other games, I think, are so dependent on what's the record going into that game. Like, if you're looking at the beginning of the series, which game's the most important? I could say that if we're going to go by the standings of the series, okay, if a series is tied 1 game apiece, I think Game 3 is maybe the most important. If the series is tied, let's say, 3 games apiece, we know Game 7's the most important, don't we? Of course. I mean, if you could say, hey, if there's one game that you have to win, which is it? Well, that would be Game 7. That kind of takes it away. The thing that I disagree about using it to be Game 2, 3, or 4, maybe you want to argue Game 1. I just think there's plenty of time after Game 1. If you want to argue Game 2 is the most important game, well, is it the most important game for the team that's up 1-0? I mean, it's probably a desperation game for a team that's down 1-0. You don't want to be down 0-2. But everybody says, you know what, if you're the road team and you're down 0-2, big deal. You're going back to your place now. So maybe there isn't pressure on you. If you are the home team and you lose Game 1, oh my gosh, there's nothing more important than Game 2. That's the most important game in the series. If you're down 1-0 at home. See how many ifs there are on what may or may not make different games important? So I agree, Game 4 is enormous if the series is sitting at 2-1 going into Game 4. Because now it determines, okay, what are we doing here? There's such a massive difference between the momentum of being up 3-1 versus just simply turning it into a best of 3 series. And in the Astros' case, they re-earned home field advantage. Now it's a best of 3 and you got 2 games in Houston. So I get Game 4's importance, but it's only based on if it's a 2-1 series. If it's a 3-0 series, how important is Game 4? You almost feel like, okay, if you lose Game 4 when you're down 0-3, it's over, and you know it's over. And if you win Game 4 when you're down 0-3, you still feel like you just put off the inevitable. You know, nothing's really changed. Okay, so what? You pushed it back to make sure you didn't lose, you get swept. You're still going to lose is what the thinking is. To me, the reason why game five is the most important game is because it doesn't matter what the schedule, what the records of the teams are going into game five. If it's sitting at 2-2, oh my gosh, you win game five, you only have to win one of the remaining two games and you're guaranteed to have one of them in your building. All right, here we go. I should say you have one in your building if it's the NBA or the NHL. And in baseball, hey, you either held home field or you just won game five and now you only have to win one of two on the at your place. And if the series is at 3-1, of course, you're either winning that game to win the whole thing. That makes it huge. Or you're winning to make it 3-2, and now there's so much pressure on the team that's up 3-2 in game six if they just lost game five. The team that wins game five, there's not as much pressure on you. But man, there's a ton of pressure. You're up 3-2, but you blew game five when you had a chance. Now you're starting to feel it. So I say game five. That's kind of your Town Hall Tuesday question, too. I realize it's Thursday, but feel free to email me, Doug at DougFranzUnplugged.com, or at UnpluggedDoug to send me a tweet, or feel free to post something on Instagram, Doug Franz Unplugged. Oh, by the way, I just started my own YouTube channel, but I don't have anything on it, I don't think. And that's just at Doug Franz Unplugged. But I'd like to know your opinion. What do you think is the most important game of a seven-game series? All right, sound credits. Just got a couple things. I got a bunch of Cliff and Kyler from azcardinals.com. They air the entire press conference. It's a heavy Cardinals day today. And I got that Dusty Baker I just played for you and the Alex Bregman from the 4-Minute Offense. I got that from MLB.com. All right, coming up next, I really think I learned something listening to Cliff and Kyler that is so apparent it needs fixed. It's next on Doug Franz Unplugged. There were quite a few things that were said yesterday in the Cardinals press conferences that I just really think, boom, there's the problem. I thought it was kind of that apparent. There's the problem. Unfortunately, I don't think it's a fixable problem. The reason why I say I don't think it's a fixable problem is because I think it's just part of the mantra of the two men of Cliff and Kyler. You're not going to change them at this point. You know, I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. And what I shouldn't have said is I shouldn't have said anything. I should just play you the Kyler. I don't want to get in your head first. I want you to hear Kyler without me unabated into your brain as opposed to unabated to the quarterback. So here's Kyler Murray when asked a question about mistakes happening during the week and that translating to Sunday and whether or not he calls out people or how does he handle mistakes that are happening during the week so they don't happen on Sundays.
I'll never fault anybody for making mistakes, you know, full speed, you know, and even myself, you know, obviously I'm hard on myself, but, you know, you don't make those mistakes during the week, you know, so it's like you get in the game and then mental mistakes is where it's, you know, that's where it's crucial, you know, the false starts or like lining up, you know, in an incorrect spot, stuff like that. So we don't do that during the week. And that's kind of why we've been struggling, you know, this season is making these things happen during the game where it's unusual of us to make these type of mistakes. And that's kind of been, you know, killing us.
Okay, you first. I don't really have a rant anymore. I'm starting to move into straight apathy when it comes to the Cardinals. And that quote there by Kyler, I thought was pretty telling. Number one, he says, you know, he doesn't really mind mistakes at full speed. Yes, listen, of course, these people are human beings. Of course they're going to make mistakes. But what we are seeing from this team is clearly a team that can't get it done in practice. To me, that's what it is. When I hear Kyler say stuff like, you know, we don't make those plays in practice, we don't make those mistakes in practice, that means you don't have any leadership. You either have a room full of people that choke under the pressure that it's now game time and they can't handle it, or you don't have leaders that hold people accountable to get it fixed. I mean, think about that, Kyler. How are all the other teams handling it? Yes, every team makes mistakes. But don't you see they're doing something in practice that you don't do? I've watched a lot of the detail series done by Peyton Manning. And I'll never forget one thing he was talking about. And he was talking to a high school kid. And when I say talking to a high school kid, the details, if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's an ESPN Plus wonderful, I wouldn't call it a documentary, just information series in which Peyton Manning goes through different games and gets right down to specific plays where he'll say this play is this important on this game, and he'll show how somebody did something that tipped off somebody else or they did it wrong. And I'll never forget him saying, so here's what you want to do. And if you're a young quarterback, get your girlfriend to film it for you and film it right from this angle, or set up a tripod right at this angle. And he wanted your recording device. And I think it was so such old that what he had is it was a camera. It wasn't a phone. But he showed all of this videotape of him handing a ball off in practice. That's all it was. Repeat after repeat after repeat. He's under center. He takes the snap. He spins back, hands it off. And he did it over and over and over again. And the reason why he kept doing it is he wanted to watch that film and make sure you could never see a difference between a running play and a pass play in the way he presented the handoff. And he had that camera positioned exactly where he says the eyes of the middle linebacker would be. He knew exactly who he wanted to fool. And he was not lying. He showed, now granted, he had them fast forwarded, but he showed 11 clips in a row of just him handing the ball off. He was that particular in making sure that he got it right. And the stories are legendary of Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and great quarterbacks of the past when things aren't being done right in practice, that the quarterback says, we're doing it again. We're not leaving until we get this right. My wife has this amazing saying she learned. I think most of you know, but my wife is a singer. And her voice teacher in college said this one thing: practice doesn't make perfect, practice makes permanent. That really stuck with me. Only perfect practice makes perfect. Just practice makes permanent. I always think about that when I see guys shooting free throws and they don't have their elbow under the ball. If your elbow isn't right under the ball, then there's no way you can always get your elbow in that position. Sometimes it would be, you know, right at 90 degrees, but then other times you start waving it around and now it's at different degrees, and therefore all of your practice is irrelevant because truthfully your elbow's in a different spot every time. There's no way you can always get your elbow in the exact same spot unless it's just perfectly under the ball. So therefore all your practice is doing is making it permanent that you're going to shoot it poorly. I look at this as the same way. Do you really believe Kyler Murray is as devoted as Peyton Manning to making sure everybody gets stuff done? Yet that's what it takes to win. And when I listened to that quote, I just didn't get it. Like, here, I'll play it again.
I'll never fault anybody for making mistakes, you know, full speed, you know, and even myself, you know, obviously I'm hard on myself, but, you know, you don't make those mistakes during the week, you know, so it's like you get in the game and then, mental mistakes is where it's, you know, that's where it's crucial. You know, the false starts or like lining up, you know, in an incorrect spot, stuff like that. So we don't do that during the week. And that's kind of why we've been struggling, you know, this season, is making these things happen during the game where it's unusual of us to make these type of mistakes. And that's kind of been, you know, killing us.
You know, you don't make those mistakes full speed. Well, why don't we go full speed in practice then? And I know someone's going to say, well, we can't hit. Then hit! I mean, at what point in a 3-5 season, in the failure of Cliff Kingsbury, do not forget, 2013 lost 5-6 to end the season. These are all to end the year. 14-4-6, 15-4-6, 16-6-8, 17-6-8, 18-5 in a row, 19-7-9, 20-5-7, 21-5 of his last 6. At what point does Cliff Kingsbury say, you know what, I gotta change this up? And you start getting, you force the pressure into practice. A leader demands the most in practice. So even when you hear him say that,
you know, you don't make those mistakes during the week, you know, so it's like you get in the game and then.
Listen, I'm not so naive to say you don't get amped up for a game. And the more hyped you are, the easier it is to make a mistake. But I will say this. If you detest losing, I mean, if you had a severe hatred of losing, aren't you going to bring the intensity into practice to make sure that you do whatever you can to actually make it feel like you're simulating a game? Even if it's in your own head? And therefore, that will help eliminate those mistakes. This is why I have no belief in Cliff and Kyler. It's little comments like that that just make me go, you're not even practicing right. And that's why on game day, suddenly it's a shock. Well, we just got to execute. Clearly, you're executing in practice because it's easy. It doesn't translate to the games because you're just that unprepared. It's not going to get better. One of the problems of this team this year has been the red zone. Before we look at the stats of it, here's Cliff Kingsbury talking about the red zone.
Yeah, just have to execute at a higher level, like I talked about, on the road, you know, loud environment, communication, getting in and out of the huddle, me getting the play call in faster, the group effort that has to be better. And you play good teams on the road like that, you got to score touchdowns and not have plays like that show up. And so that'll be worked on this week, and we got to be better against Seattle.
When he said plays like that, he was talking about the Billy Price snap and some of the other problems in the red zone. You know, here's the numbers behind Cliff Kingsbury as the head coach. 2019, they were in 29th place. There are 32 teams. They were in 29th place in red zone. And I go by touchdown percentage. Okay, so what that means is once you get into the red zone, all right, that's a red zone possession. Now, what are the percentages that you score a touchdown on the red zone percentage? So he was 29th in year one, 10th in year two, 15th last year. And they're 16, which is dead middle, number of 32 teams this year. So in the 4 years of Cliff Kingsbury, they've got a 17.5 average position. They average being the 17th best team, 17th and a half, best team in the NFL at red zone percentage. That's an offensive genius with an unbelievably athletic running quarterback. 17 and a half. And when he says just this stuff, I'm so numb to the phrase, we just got to execute better. Because now we know what the problem is. The problem is in practice. They think they can walk out from their pillow fight practices and walk into a game and suddenly they're just going to be able to execute. That's a leadership issue. The leaders on this team, I shouldn't say on the whole team. I'm going to say Kyler. They just aren't good enough at holding people accountable. He just throws a fit. And Cliff is not what he's cracked up to be. And now you know the red zone problems. Here's Kyler saying the magic three words that I am so sick of with this team.
You know, sense of urgency's got to be at all time high. All the guys understand that. They know what's at stake. You know, they know where we can take this thing, or we can let it, you know, slip away. But everything is right there for us. But I mean, we're focused on this week, so can't really look too far ahead. But we understand what's ahead.
It's in reference to the amazing scheduling quirk where you have three divisional opponents in a row: home against Seattle, at the Rams. Technically home against the 49ers, but Monday Night Football in Mexico City for that game. When I look at the other teams in the division, yes, they have brought the Cardinals into a position where if you go 3-0, look out. You know, now suddenly you feel hot, you're 6-5, you're a game above 500, and now you've picked up potential tiebreakers. You go 0-3, 1-2, it's basically over. You go 1-2 in this stretch, and you're 3-5. Now you're 4-7, and you know you've got to get probably 9 wins, maybe 10, in order to make the playoffs. Well, if you're sitting there at 4-7, well, now you got to go 5-1 to get to 9 wins. They're not going to do that. And yet, here's Kyler saying our sense of urgency has to be at an all-time high. How is it not somewhat close to that every single time? I mean, I want to be fair. They're human beings. They have a job just like we do. Are you just as motivated to do your job every single day? And yes, it's easy to say, come on, Doug, they're millionaires. How hard would we fight? How hard would we play if we got to play a game for a $7 million check? I'm not denying the fact that you're right, but we all take wherever we are in our situation for granted. All of us do. You realize there's somebody right now in Haiti that thinks, do you know what I could do in my life if I actually could just have running water, if I didn't have to spend an hour walking down to some area where I'm going to get water today because my village doesn't have it? You know what I mean? So we don't think like that. There's somebody else thinking, oh, if I just had what you and I have, whatever it is, somewhere in the world, they're saying how much more productive they would be if they had that. So we all take our situations for granted. The players do it too, because they're human. But my point with that is when you have to have the sense of urgency thing repeated over and over again, at what point do we ask the question, why aren't you bringing that to practice? You can't just show up on Sunday and say, we now have a sense of urgency. That sense of urgency has to hit at the beginning of practice, and you have to have nobody ever talks about these legendary Cardinals practices. I love talking to Dan Marley and hearing about the Pat Riley practices. You know what I mean? Now, I don't think you need to run people that level into the ground, but they're ready for a game, aren't they? I don't know. I just don't see enough urgency Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then they're all shocked when things don't go their way on Sunday. Cliff Kingsbury gave a scary stat.
Analytics told me we've been behind 91% of the time through the first 8 weeks. So I think it was about 6 minutes of each game we've had a lead on average. And to still, you know, have an opportunity to be in the race at that point is, you got to have some gratitude for that and understand that you got an opportunity to play better. And we think our best football is out in front of us. And it has to be these next 3 weeks against three really good opponents.
Why are you trailing 91% of the snaps this year, Cliff? Why? You're approaching 800 days since you received the opening kickoff and scored a touchdown on that drive. you have the same amount of time, almost. You never know if somebody else has a Monday night game the week before or you do or something like that. But you have basically the same amount of time as the other team to prepare for the game. So what's wrong with your game plan? What's wrong with your practice schedule, your practice intensity, your game management? How does all this come to a head where you are trailing 91% of the time? And you're the offensive genius that is averaging, you know, let me cheat and look it up. Oh my gosh, no way, no way. I didn't know it was this bad. The Cardinals are averaging 1.1 points per first quarter. So you got all week to get ready. You're averaging 1.1 points per first quarter. That's the definition of ineptitude. Oh, yeah, by the way, that is in last place. And this is your offensive genius. You would think with a week and a half last week, or a week in most weeks, you would be able to do better than that. If you're this offensive genius. Like, you've got all week to look at what they do and then be able to do something about it. Expose the weaknesses that you've seen during your week of study. And you're averaging 1.1 points per first quarter. The flip side is you call plays in the first quarter that set up big plays in the second half. Well, they're not doing that either because they're terrible at deep shots. Another stat, yards per attempt. It's a great stat because it basically shows you your play design and it shows your receiver's ability to get open and it shows your quarterback's either A, ability to read coverage, or B, his mentality in attacking it. The Pittsburgh Steelers average 6 yards per attempt. That's the worst in the NFL, 6. So with a quarterback that's already been benched and a rookie quarterback from the previous first round of the draft, they're at 6, and they're number 32 in the league. Cardinals are at 6.1 yards per attempt. 6.1. You're trying to develop chemistry with Marquise Brown. And then Hollywood gets hurt right when you get D-Hop back. There's no way around you lost two good players. That's hard to do what you need to do. But I'm not going to give in any way any leeway to Cliff Kingsbury because he was without DeAndre Hopkins most of last year. And he didn't learn how to be better without him. And with all the Rondale Moore sideways, the horizontal hurry, that's the play call. The play call is quickly throw it out to Rondale Moore on a screen. No one will see that coming. So you're the reason. It's not just like, hey, Kyler drop back, make the read, and he keeps checking down. It's the play is supposed to be thrown behind the line. Or the play is 2 yards down the field, and that's it. So 1.1 points per first quarter, 6.1 yards per attempt for Cliff Kingsbury. How about some deep shots?
I think everybody, like you said, the scores are way down. I think if you have, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen who can throw it 90 yards and throw over the top of it, you may have some answers there. But, yeah, it's just about execution. There's things you can scheme up and hit plays over the top and make things happen. But you've seen it throughout the league. That catch-style defense is keeping in front, rush five and try to have a negative play occur and hold a team to field goals or turn them over, make them punt. And so there's definitely ways to attack it to try and hit some big plays. But if you try to force it too much, there will definitely be some negative outcomes.
Do you invest in practice time 20-plus deep play drills?
20-plus, yeah, definitely throughout the week. Yeah, we'll take, I would say, close to that many shots through 3 days of practice. Yeah.
Is that enough to make you think it should be there?
Yeah, for whatever reason, it hasn't, you know, been there this year. We haven't connected on the deep ball. I don't know. I can't think of many this year. We've been able to push the ball down the field and actually hit any, and that's been something we've been really good at previously. So we'll continue to work at it, and hopefully with Robbie and we get Hollywood back at some point, you know, those guys can really stretch the field. We can connect on a few of those.
Let me explain just how full of crap he is. Let's go back to the yards per attempt stat. Let's use facts to blow him out of the water. He talked about, hey, scoring is down and deep shots aren't there. Defenses are playing a bend but don't break. So unless you've got Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen to just throw it over the top, you know, the, right now there's just not plays to be made. Okay. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills are third. They're both tied for third in yards per attempt at 8.1. Okay? Tied for third. And for those of you that don't realize it, when you're keeping stats, if you're tied for third, that means no one's in fourth place. You're tied for third, and the next team goes to fifth place, okay, in the rankings of yards per attempt. So he's saying unless you have those two, then you're not going to be, you know, able to just take a lot of deep shots right now. Here are the other people that are in the top seven categories, or excuse me, the top seven places. Tell me if you notice a theme here. Number one, Philadelphia, Jalen Hurts. Number two, Miami, Tua Tagovailoa. 3-4, Buffalo, Kansas City. Number five, Atlanta. Yeah. Marcus Mariota. Sorry. Number six, San Francisco, Jimmy G, who just had Christian McCaffrey throw a longer touchdown pass than he has in about 4 years. Number seven, Seattle and Geno Smith. Finally, at eight, you get one of the young guns again in Joe Burrow at yards per attempt. So he says, unless you've got a Pat Mahomes or a Josh Allen, yet, wouldn't you expect Kyler Murray? I don't know about you. Let's go back to draft day, okay? And no, I was not a big believer in Marcus Mariota on draft day. Honestly, I didn't like either of those quarterbacks. Like everybody said, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. No, I didn't like either of them. So which one of these quarterbacks did you think were going to be light years ahead of Kyler Murray? Jalen Hurts at Philly, Tua Tagovailoa in Miami, Marcus Mariota in Atlanta, who I think is that's his third team, Jimmy G in San Francisco, Geno Smith in Seattle. Minus Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, those are the quarterbacks from 1 through 7 and the teams from 1 through 7 in yards per attempt. And yet Cliff Kingsbury is explaining why, in a sense, there's no deep shots for them. They're in 31st place. That's incredible. I mean, you talk about an ability to sit and lie to yourself. I don't think he's lying to us. There's a difference for me between being full of crap and lying. I don't think he's being intentionally dishonest. I think he's that clueless. I think there's a big difference. They're hoping Robbie Anderson learning the playbook will change that stat. Kyler, how's he look?
Kind of just got to force all the, you know, everything on him. You know, see, how well, obviously, if he can, you know, take all the information in as quickly as possible. If not, back off a little bit. But I think he's a very smart player. You know, he understands what we're doing now. This is week three for him, so he'll be up to speed by this weekend for sure.
That's a big statement. I have no idea if Cliff really knows how to use him, but that's a big statement. It is intriguing to think of Rondale Moore on one side, Robbie Anderson on the other, with Greg Dortch, Zach Ertz, and DeAndre Hopkins doing underneath things and making a defense decide what are you going to do about it. But there's been way too many times I've sat here on this show or on the old show and thought about, wow, look at all these weapons for Cliff Kingsbury, and nothing happens. I sit here, sorry that I just couldn't talk all of a sudden. I just sit here and I'm wondering, why does the fan base have to put up with this much longer? I mean, does Michael really think it's going to get better? By the way, I thought this was entertaining. I had a very good friend. I don't know if he felt like, I don't really want my name associated with this quote or not, so I won't tell you who it was. But I had a friend text me that said someone from the Cardinals called asking if he's going to renew his season ticket. Say, hey, the deadline's coming up. We want to get you to renew your season tickets. We want to talk to you about it. And he said, well, I can't answer that question because I don't want to renew if Cliff Kingsbury's coming back. And the guy totally understood, and said, we'll keep in touch. In that type of business, you have to be overwhelmed with the number of times you've heard that before you don't argue it anymore. If somebody says, well, I want to see if you're going to fire the head coach or not, because if you're going to bring back the same head coach, then I'm not really willing to pay the money. What happens in the beginning is you have all of these talking points. They'll have a sheet right there that says, if somebody complains about Cliff Kingsbury, say, well, you know what? It is a little down right now, but do you realize, and they have these stats that are true, it's just they're a little bit persuasive in a crappy way, meaning like early on in the tenure of Cliff Kingsbury, they kept talking about how great his offense was doing in year one. Well, they were comparing it to Mike McCoy and Steve Wilkes. Okay? They were saying, well, look how much better this offense is than last year. Yeah. Than Sam Bradford. Okay. Thanks, buddy. Thanks. Well, now, if they're at the point where they just say, you know what, we'll get back to you, that means they've stopped fighting it. That many season ticket holders have regurgitated that same opinion. So even though it was news to my buddy, and it was the first time it had happened to him, it's clearly happening multiple times to the sales staff of the Arizona Cardinals. Those kind of stories get back to Michael Bidwell. Going to be interesting to see the Seattle contingency this weekend. How many Seattle fans are there? Two more things real quick, Cardinals-wise. Left tackle situation. I thought this was interesting. Cliff Kingsbury was asked, what is the status of DJ Humphries and how did Josh Jones do last week as the starting left tackle?
I was proud of Josh. I thought he stepped up. That's a really good front, obviously. Some of the best rushers in football, and he battled and knew his assignments and competed at a high level, and that's what we've wanted to see from him. And Hump, he'll be day-to-day this week. He feels a little bit better, but I'm not sure he'll make it by Sunday.
I had a weird opinion of Josh. I thought he did poorly in the first quarter. And then admittedly, I didn't notice him again. So I'm kind of assuming he did well. Like, you could easily email me a bunch of plays and say, Doug, what are you talking about? And show me him getting blown up in the third quarter, blown up in the fourth quarter, blown up multiple times in the second. You know, you could. And I would just have to say, okay, I blew it. I missed it. But I mean this as a compliment. I didn't notice Josh in the last three quarters. And when you don't notice an offensive lineman, that normally means, well, you must have done pretty well. I loved that draft pick, by the way. And it hasn't come to fruition, but this is his time. This is his time. This is really, really important for him to save his career and do something with it and give himself an opportunity in free agency if the Cardinals don't want to keep him. The last thing for you is, you know what? I won't tell you. I won't get in the way of this one. Kyler was asked about the wristband. That's all I'm going to say. He was asked about the wristband that he was wearing that had the plays on it.
Yeah, I haven't done that since. Should probably. I think I did it at A&M. think he did that, you know. But yeah, it was. I mean, it's a big ass wristband. It took up half my arm, so it was definitely. You know, once you get in the game, it wasn't any different. But I didn't feel, you know, I didn't feel too great about it the week leading up to the week.
Well, it's funny because you're the kind of guy. I mean, yeah. Let's face it, you like how you look, yeah. And that changes how you look.
It definitely did. No, but it was good. It was good. You said what?
Why the need to wear it?
Just because it was loud and just being able to, yeah, with the huddle, being able to communicate and stuff like that.
Listen, I really don't have a lot to say here because it bothers me, but I admit that that's wrong, that it bothers me. Like, I'm the one that's wrong. Larry Fitzgerald cared deeply about how he looked on the football field. Cared deeply about everything looking right and all of his uniform in place. And he cared about the look he gave off. And to hear that, you know, Kyler really cares about the look and it's embarrassing for him to wear the wristband. I think I'm wrong for my feelings, but I'll tell you what they are. I don't understand it at all. The idea that your look is more important than winning. And no, he did not say it was. And you can get fired up at me for even suggesting it, but that's how I feel. That how do you even notice how you look? How does it even remotely matter versus just do the game plan? Just win. And if you care about how you look before the game, you're going to care about the look. Again, I love Larry Fitzgerald and Larry cared. All right. So all bets are off. I can't rip Kyler, but I don't like that. And now, the every Wednesday edition, except when I forget on Wednesday and I do it on Thursday. Research by Doug. Originally called Research and Doug, however, you're not allowed to take something, even if you invented it, from another station and then use it on your own once you leave. So therefore, I've changed the name and we'll just call it Research by Doug because I'm the one doing it. Even though my wife does help me on this, I must fully admit to you that she helps me, but I write them up. Here you go. Some of the stats from the last week in any sport that I found really interesting. Geno Smith, get ready for this since you're playing the Seattle Seahawks, has 6 games with multiple passing touchdowns this year. He had 7 games in his first 9 years. So 7 times in 9 years, he threw 2 touchdown passes or more. This year, he's already done it 6 times. Bill Belichick won his 325th game, surpassing Pro Football Hall of Famer George Halas, who had 324. He's now in 2nd place, and he only needs 23 wins to pass Don Shula and become the winningest head coach in the history of the NFL. Derrick Henry recorded his 6th career game with at least 200 rushing yards. That now ties him for the most in NFL history with Adrian Peterson and O.J. Simpson. In all 6 of those games that he's rushed for 200 yards, he also had 2 rushing touchdowns. The record before Derrick Henry of 2 rushing touchdowns and a 200-yard gain is 3 games all time, held by some of the legends. Walter Payton did it 3 times. Jim Brown did it 3 times. Emmitt Smith as well, but Henry's done it 6. Christian McCaffrey is the 4th player with a touchdown pass, a rushing touchdown, and a touchdown reception in a single game since 1970. You try to figure out which one of these names don't belong. The other 3 are Walter Payton, LaDainian Tomlinson, and back in 2001, David Patton. 3 different things for Tyreek Hill. He recorded his 9th career game with 10 receptions and 150 yards. 9. That now ties him with Tim Brown for the 5th most in NFL history. The catch is the other 4 only did it 10. Antonio Brown, Andre Johnson, Julio Jones, and Jerry Rice, they're all at 10. So all he has to do is have 2 more games of 10 receptions and 150 yards. he'll have more than anybody else all time. This might come as a shock to you. Tyreek Hill's going to go to the Hall of Fame. I'm serious. I never thought that either. Hill joins, you ready? Roy Green of the 1984 Arizona Cardinals of the St. Louis Cardinals, as the only players ever with at least 150 receiving yards in four of his team's first eight games to start a season. And Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle have combined for 1,688 receiving yards so far. That's the most by a set of teammates in the first eight games of a season since the Super Bowl began. Right, back to the Cardinals. Arizona wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins passed the 800 reception mark on Sunday, now standing at 811. By reaching 800 receptions in his 138 career games, that's the fifth fewest games in NFL history. The only players to get to 800 receptions faster: Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Marvin Harrison, and Andre Johnson. Denver running back Latavius Murray recorded the game-winning rushing touchdown for the Broncos when they beat Jacksonville at Wembley Stadium in London. Murray also rushed for a touchdown for the Saints in their game in London in week four, making Latavius Murray the first player in NFL history to score a rushing touchdown for two different teams in the same season in London. According to NFL Next Gen Stats, this trade the Miami Dolphins made for Bradley Chubb is a big one, because Chubb is third place in pass rush win rate among all edge rushers. He defeats his block within 2.5 seconds over 25% of the time. This is a stat I didn't care about until I heard about the gap. The Browns have gone 235 straight games without winning by a shutout. That's second place in the NFL for the longest drought. So 30 of the 32 teams have shut somebody out within their last 235 games. The Browns are second worst at their streak being at 235. The Commanders are in first place, or worst place, I would say. Here's the difference. It's been 235 straight games for the Browns without a shutout win. It's been 500 for Washington. So if the Browns are in second, or second worst at 235, and you double it and you're still not at the total of Washington? Luka Doncic became the first player since Michael Jordan in 86 to score at least 30 points in his team's first six games of the season. But he did that earlier in the week. He did it again last night. He now becomes the first player since Wilt Chamberlain to score 30 points a game in his first seven games to start the season. And the last one, whenever Tony Pollard has 15 touches for the Dallas Cowboys, Dallas is 8-0, and they score 37 points in those games. Wow. And that is research by Doug. Hopefully you loved every second of it as much as I love putting those together, because I find those interesting. I like it better when the Cardinals win, because I can find more Cardinal stats. So sorry I don't have those for you. Coming up next, oh, King Cappers crushes it again versus Vegas on Doug Franz Unplugged.
Do you want to get in the game and need that extra edge? Go to KingCappers.com. Do you feel left out, not knowing the difference between a parlay and a point spread? KingCappers.com. King Cappers doesn't take bets. We tell you which teams to bet on, giving you the advantage you need on sportsbooks. Buy one sports handicapping package and get one free for the first 200 people. Get in the game with King Cappers. That's KingCappers.com.
It's time for
Versus Vegas.
I got more. Yeah, we got a four spot yesterday. How about that? This is Versus Vegas. It's presented by KingCappers.com, in which you go to KingCappers.com and say, I don't want to fail. I want a professional handicapper to help me with my picks. You use promo code ARMY. You save money when you do that. And you can either choose a sport where you think, hey, I'm already good. I just want to have that little push. You can choose just a weekend package and decide, you know what, let me test out kingcappers.com and get a little advice for the week. Or you could go with a big package and have them help you with everything. That's how kingcappers.com works. Don't forget to use promo code ARMY, as in being a member of the Unplugged Army, and they can help you out with their picks. And don't forget, tomorrow is a Double Barrel Friday. And if I know anything about Jerry, they lost both of their picks last Friday. That's still sticking in his crawl. I would pay very close attention tomorrow. I would pay very close attention tomorrow, thinking you're going to get some good intel on what's about to happen. For me, 2-0 2 days ago, 4-1 last night. Thank you. Thank you. I'm here for you. As I took the Astros on the money line, got it, 5-0. I took Sacramento at Miami to go under the 226. It ended up at 117. Crushed that pick. And I had Toronto and Buffalo both covering the puck line. And the Leafs won 5-2. And the Sabres won 6-3. Yeah. Thank you. Pretty happy with myself. The one I got wrong, I thought Charlotte would beat Chicago. Not beat, but would win close enough against the spread, since Chicago was coming off a back-to-back. Well, Chicago won 106-88. I wasn't even close. So if I lose points for being that far off, I might. But hey, it's just one game on a 4-1 night. I'll take that. All right. That's the minnow stuff. That's not the real stuff. You want the free play from the shark. Here's Jerry, kingcappers.com. Jerry, how'd you do, by the way, yesterday on another hot soccer pick?
We cash yet another soccer selection as Maccabi Haifa and Benfica both score before the 27th minute in the first half, and we get that lunch money.
Yes, you do.
Thursday selection takes us to the NHL, where the Nashville Predators visit the Calgary Flames. Our spreadsheet play of the day recommends a play on the Calgary Flames in regulation. Tune in tomorrow for our bounce back double barrel action, and let's cash.
Let's cash. There you go. I love that. Let's cash. You see, he even called it out, the double barrel. I'm telling you. There's no way he's letting that happen again. All right. That's the shark play for tonight. The minnow plays. I hate the Astros, but I'm going to go with them again. I'm going to take them on the money line, though, because the juice isn't that bad. Not great, but not bad. So I'll take the Astros on the money line against the Phillies. I get Justin Verlander. That's kind of why I'm doing it. Even though Verlander's not the greatest of all time. I've also got as far as postseason. And I got a clean sweep by Houston. I'm going to take the Texans plus the 13.5. I don't know if you knew that. I said it earlier in the podcast today. Seventh time in the history of sports where a football team is hosting a team from the... They're both from the same city as the World Series. So tonight it's Astros at Phillies. It's Texans home against the Eagles. Now, we all know the Eagles are 400 times better. But to have a 2-touchdown spread in football on a nationally televised game on a Thursday night for the home team, that seems like a lot. 13.5 seems like a lot. So I'll take the Texans plus 13.5. And then something very obscure. I'm going to take Appalachian State on the road on the money line at Coastal Carolina. I like App State tonight. So those are my three plays that I've got for Versus Vegas presented by kingcappers.com. That does it for today's Thursday version of Doug Franz Unplugged. Don't forget tomorrow's show. I won't have Sean Aguano on the show, but I'll have some info about Sean Aguano after I talk to him one-on-one at a Valley Booster Club get-together, Valley Athletic Booster Club get-together for the Sun that supports the Sun Devils. So I should have some great info for you. Plus, it's a tailgate show with all kinds of stuff on U of A, ASU, and the Cardinals for the weekend. Thanks a lot to Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical, proud sponsor of Doug Franz Unplugged. If you have any issues, especially now, think about it. You're getting close to the holidays. Please keep that number handy. Something bad happens to the toilet before the in-laws come over. Let's go. We got to get that fixed fast. 602-2-REPAIR. That's 602, the number 2. Then REPAIR for Parker and Sons. Need to have an outing. And I need to see you at Rosati's, Bell's Nashville Kitchen, or Burrito Express pretty soon. Because I haven't been out and about lately. And been kind of in a hole. But I'm good. But I need to get out and get a beer with you. So we'll try to do that very, very soon. And now that we're getting close to the holidays, think about those three restaurants as well for the holidays. And I mean that totally. Like, if you're having a holiday party, have you ever thought of just renting out all of Bell's? Like, if you're in charge of that at your company, you could have Bell's for the whole night and just bring people in. And they can handle the drinks. They can handle the food. I mean, how awesome is that? And it's a perfect place to have a holiday party. And when I say you can have it there, you rent the place out. Like, they don't let anybody else in. This is yours. That's awesome. Or get pizzas from Rosati's and just have a little get-together. Or maybe buy everybody in the office lunch with Burrito Express. So if you're thinking about some holiday ideas, don't forget about Bell's, Rosati's at Ray and McQueen and Chandler, and Burrito Express. Oh, sorry, Yoda. I kind of fell asleep there for a second because it's already 6:11 this morning. Don't forget, if you're interested in starting your own podcast or you want to start advertising on other people's podcasts, you can contact Yoda. At Fushaw Media is the handle, or you can just email me, Doug at DougFranzUnplugged.com, and I'll get you in touch with Yoda to be able to help you out. Can't wait for tomorrow's tailgate show, and I can't wait to get to bed because I'm tired. I'm really tired. Dominate your Thursday. And as Jerry says, let's cash. I'll see you tomorrow.